So our second speaker in this session is Anna Schlier from the University of Cambridge.
Hi everyone. So today I want to speak to you about my PhD research, which focuses on the carceral experiences of young women in Scotland. I'll first talk you through some background information on the project and some methods before going into some findings, which will focus in particular on mobilities. And a lot of the pictures you see here today are from the young women, some of the young women that I worked with. So focusing on young female detainees in Scotland, I wanted to kind of understand their experiences of different types of closed institutions, and I focused on secure care, prison and closed psychiatric units, all of which impact the kind of complex geographies that these young women experience. And understanding kind of institutional journeys with reference to age and gender allows a kind of insight into the highly mobile and often precarious and unfamiliar lives these young women live on the margins. In order to be able to understand the young women's gendered, emotional, often repetitive experiences of closed institutions, I first focused on the kind of constitution of closed space in order to look at architecture, design rules, block regulations, and so on. Whereas the second part of my thesis focused on the young women's individual experiences of confinement, including their views on entering an institution, how they adapt and resist the regime, and how they kind of cope with the embodied kind of aspects of detention, some of which we heard earlier, like things like childbirth, for example, featured from the young women I spoke to as well. And the third and final step, which I will focus on mostly today, connects the institution and the individual by looking at the young women's journeys through different institutions and the different and high levels of mobility, not just in the closed spaces, but also in the community before even entering a closed institutions, for example, in care spaces and beyond. So the PhD kind of sits comfortably within carceral geography, but also pushing at its boundaries a little bit. So on a conceptual level, re-engagement with Goffman's microanalysis kind of challenges current carceral geographic theory. But more importantly, I think the project kind of pushes for an engagement with different institutions under the umbrella of carceral geography, thus creating a new dialogue between issues like care and control and how they kind of interact with each other, especially in the context of young people. And finally, an engagement with young women in particular, I think, addresses an underrepresented population within carceral geography in ways that raise kind of distinct and problematic concerns for academic research and also penal policy. Talking a little bit about young female detainees in Scotland, they kind of they challenge the codes of hegemonic femininity in ways that are kind of quite distinct for young women in particular. So they are often portrayed as an aberration, so masculinized and pathologized, or redefined as a kind of feminine condition, so adolescent girls as emotional, as irrational and out of control. And Berman and Batchelor, who've done quite a lot of research in Scotland on this, argue that young women are largely overlooked and marginalized and ignored by policy, practice, and research because female offenders are often, because they're such a small group in the overall prison estate, for example, they're seen as a one homogenous group of female offenders as such. So women, and especially young women, have been presented as a particular problem in the Scottish penal discourse since the 1980s. But despite this, specific services and effective working with young women across the criminal justice system remain underdeveloped. And their low number and invisibility are a reason for a limited number of programs and also projects that take into account both gender and age. So there's a blurring boundary between rule-breaking and law-breaking, which is an increasing problem when it comes to young women in particular, because control is no longer just a matter of the criminal justice system, but exerted by community organizations, local authority, housing agencies, schools, and so on. And the process of control penetrates the family, school, neighborhood, and kind of employs discipline and normalization in ways that are kind of new, I think, for young women in Scotland. The majority of women that experience detention are characterized by addiction, mental health problems, health difficulties, and they're often called high risk and highly risky group of people and are kind of characterized by this type of behavior. They also come from very deprived socioeconomic backgrounds. A lot of them have kind of very limited education, have been thrown out of school and so on, and generally lead quite chaotic lives. There's also an exposure to violence that is kind of an everyday reality for them, and the Scottish government in a paper have said that they see their offending as a reasoned response and a necessary means to establish respect, to protect against and preempt victimization and preserve self-integrity. So there is a sense of policy which kind of takes on board their particular position in some ways. However, they're often seen as intractable, awkward and difficult, so very impossible to treat and impossible to work with. And these perceptions are very important when it comes to kind of resulting in support provision, which is often very much underdeveloped. Just a very brief account of the methods that I use. So during my field work, I spent a lot of time in prison, insecure care, about 9 months of field work. And I spoke to young women, to members of staff in the community, but also in prison, insecure care. And I tried to get access to closed psychiatric units as well, but that didn't work out because they didn't really want to engage, as a health service, they didn't really want to engage with people with offending behavior. I spent quite a lot of time doing an ethnography as well, just being on the unit, just seeing what's happening on a kind of micro level, I guess. And I worked with a charity called Up to Us and a project that they set up, which is called Time for Change. And it was set up for highly vulnerable and at-risk young women in West Central Scotland. And they're working in close institutions and the community and are the only kind of service in Scotland that kind of engages with young women in both settings and kind of supports them across this transition as well. And I was quite lucky to be able to work with them because they're quite a small organization. I could actually engage with them in terms of their kind of everyday work in the community and get involved kind of in research in a more practical way, if you like. In the end, I did over 70 interviews, 48 young women in total, and I kind of tried to understand, I guess, their what their experiences are in the institution, but also how they experience the time in between and the kind of journeys they go through. And I want to talk to you about this mobility aspect of my research in the following. Even though this project explores, I guess, mostly the institutional life, it's not a narrative of inertia, but one that is very much characterized by movement and journeying, if you like. So the young women's experience of closed space can be seen as, I guess, chapters within a story of mobility. Exploring the institution's permeability and widening the view of the castle kind of helps to make sense of the broader institutional landscape and the young women's lives beyond incarceration. So to uncover the experiences outside nonetheless reveals a continuation of disciplinary care and control that shapes their highly mobile worlds. And I just want to say here that I acknowledge here that journey could be understood in the light of an individual continually requiring intervention and set goals, but I understand it in the sense here as a kind of in an elementary visualization of movement. It could be long or short, difficult or forthright, open or closed, so where both mobile and inertial practices can equally be seen as displays of power, status, abandonment, or deprivation. Tracing the paradox of the unachievable aspiration kind of uncovers that through assemblages of care and control, a form of abandonment is created that deeply shapes the young women's lives. And in order to trace this form of abandonment, it's necessary to follow their journeys and to see kind of even to see where they've come from and where they're going, even though tracking is always, I think, needs to be approached with caution and handled sensitively. So in this sense, the carceral archipelago is loosely understood as a kind of contextual space, seen as widening of the carceral sphere through encompassing disciplinization. And in this contextual space between and across where the young women kind of move around, solid institutions can be seen as crucial nodes beyond which additional diffused methods of care and control create castral assemblages, in that sense, beyond just the institutional walls themselves. So that within that, I guess they move through in their journeys through, in, out, and beyond the criminal justice system. And that is set in an environment of abandonment, I guess, within magnified care and control. And this form of abandonment finds its figurative metaphor in the femina sacra, which I've used quite a lot in this last chapter of my PhD, as a form of exclusion and displacement that renders these young women kind of absent from perpetual processes of control, institutional paradoxes, and extreme mobility. So there are some quotes up, which I'm not going to read out, but feel free to, I hope you can read through them while I talk. So in the interviews, all detainees reveal how their lives have been shaped by mobility, telling moving stories of involuntary displacement and changes in location. While detention at a closed institution may appear as a period of standstill within a life of high mobility, many young women rather present their time inside as part of this mobility. So they claim that it's particularly evident when considering the entangled experiences of different closed institutions, like the first quote by Jamie here. But mobility is described as both top-down kind of social work practice in attempting to control these young women's lives and kind of regain control over them in some way, but also a bottom-up agentic strategy on part of their own kind of narrative. In their younger years, many young women describe how absconding was part of a main reason for ending up in a closed institution in the first place. And complicated family relationships and care histories often lead to a web of possible docking stations, I guess, that can be seen in the young women's mental maps, one of which I'll show you a little bit later. This is often highly mobile in their lifestyle, and they're kind of retracing these steps is quite complicated, but also very revealing in understanding what their life is like. Many describe feeling disconnected from the places where they stay, particularly in homeless accommodation, a lack of personal items, a loss of items as well, and interchangeable interiors leave no space for feeling at home. And this can go on for years and years, so many people end up in care in their young years and then move into homeless accommodation and never really have a sense of feeling at home. Having to move and lose accommodation because of misbehavior is a common experience and general feeling about the temporary nature of where they're staying. So staying close institution adds an extra layer of complication to that housing situation, and a lot of them lose settled housing options and personal belongings in the process of ending up in prison and secure care. Having to depend on oneself from an early age is also a common experience, and many describe how they struggle with being by themselves, such as losing accommodation or going off the rails is often connected to struggles with profound feelings of loneliness and isolation. And young detainees experience displacement and being cut off from communication in various ways, most intensely in the closed institution, but also in the community. Talking about the high levels of mobility, young women mention it's both enabling and part of their freedom, and as a struggle, but also a struggle mentally and resource-wise. Being here, there, and everywhere, which is what Joanne is saying, is deeply ingrained in their everyday lives. Kaylee, for example, explains how she cannot be handled in families or children's home and was moved on and on and on, an explanation shared by many young women. And this experience not to fit in is a very powerful identity mark, I think, that works across the whole group of young women I spoke to. And the ambivalence between moving about on your own accord and being moved is kind of very blurry, the kind of it's not very clear, so they use both sometimes in the same sentence even. One says, I was just told, right, you're moving, but then in a little bit later on she said, I'd be sent to get moved because I was sick of where I'm staying. So in a sense, it's not quite clear who's doing what or who's the agent, I guess, in that sense. In this context, closed institutions provide a spatial fixture in anchoring the young women are set for a set amount of time, but equally adding to their mobility. So Flo says, I got put into secure when I turned 16 and then just been in and out since. I guess being moved around different care homes and foster care is described as difficult and unsettling, like Nora says in the first quote out there. Mobility requires a different attitudes towards belonging as well as people. And in this case, for young people who have to move far, for example, moving down to England to get psychiatric care that's not available in Scotland, as well as moving many times within the same city. So for example, one young woman I spoke to moved 14 different children's homes all in the Glasgow area. I try to kind of map these young women's pathways, and this is just an example of the young women I spoke to at Time for Change, so it's not the whole sample of people I spoke to, but you can see that how many stays they have in the different institutions as well as in the community. And at the end, and the moves, you can see that some moved 16 times, 20 times, 70 times, and 149 times in the space of a couple of years. But their own descriptions from interview data, mental maps, as well as case files helped me to create this kind of general pictures of their journey that appears kind of blurred in some places, but the mapping of stays in closed institutions can be done relatively easily because there's a record of where they've been when. It's very different when trying to map where they've been where they've moved around in the community. So there's different care placements and stays in homeless accommodation. Of the 48 young women, a minimum of 34 have experienced care outside their parental home. And while 5 of them have been cared for by relatives only, 29 experienced different forms of residential childcare. Of those 29 women, the majority were accommodated in residential childcare from their teenage years, and for an overall average of 10 years of age. And this seems to be really significant in what I found across the board over the whole kind of sample, because many young women spoke about the problems they kind of experienced from their early teens being deemed out of parental control and unmanageable, often leading to a spiral of many care placements and then ending up in closed institutions. All young women interviewed have experienced at least one stay in a closed institution, many counting multiple types of institutions and multiple stays. So out of the 48 young women I spoke to, 26 experienced stays in secure care, which is 54%, ranging between 1 and 9 separate stays. 13 experienced stays in closed psychiatric wards, and the highest number, the most prominent institution, was prison, affecting 33 out of 48 young women, with the number of stays ranging from 8, from 1 to 8. From an age of 16 and higher, many young people have experienced stays in homeless accommodation. So that could be B&Bs, that could be hostels, emergency accommodation, and medium-term homeless accommodation. And the experience of homelessness is not really tied to age, even though officially that only happens from the age of 16. Many are categorized as roofless or sofa surfing and so on from a much younger age. So the calculated number of moves does not represent a veritable figure. It's more a representation of what the young women's lives are like. So I couldn't really, they often couldn't remember exactly where they moved from, even though they tried to map it. But it's interesting, you can see it maybe here, this is just one map, that there's many different institutions. I can't really remember exact time frames, but it just shows how mobile their lives are. So the young women's descriptions of their journeys through life have a lot to say about their kind of experiences on the outside and how that contributes to their mobility. But also the closed institutions are seen as important, if not decisive, parts of the larger castle assemblages that manifest in being kept on the move in a sense of rootlessness. So just to conclude, the kind of paradox of extreme levels of control and turned into care, and little consistent empowering support spawns an environment of abandonment, clashes with the law coupled with frequent exposure to trauma, violence, and death, as well as exclusion from kind of mainstream societal structures like schools and so on, frequent displacement, interrupted and complicated relationships with family and friends and partners, and struggles with mental health and clashes with their own expectations all create an abandonment that sits uneasily within the system provided to care for and control these young women. So when coupled with gender dimensions, moral judgment about behavior, this adds an extra layer of exclusion, that I see as an example of femina sacra, albeit with an age-specific characteristic. So being abandoned is not just a state in which they suddenly find themselves, but they often have been actually practically abandoned from an early age and handed around in different care settings. So the gender dimension of abandonment is particularly evident through high levels of mobility, so not being as settled as expected of a young woman, or high levels of risk, especially gendered and sexually compromised risk, and high levels of unmet need, seen as needy and overseeking, and being unable to sustain relationships, particularly as mothers and partners, and also then in the end showing offending behavior, which is against gender stereotypes. So that's basically what I've been trying to say, is that these young women experience this high level of mobility, which sits within the kind of construct of closed institutions and how that all kind of interacts in their lives and leads to control. Thank you.